Mini episode 350 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special joint presentation between the FDH Lounge and Sportsology. This is FDH Lounge dignitary Rick Morris. Got with me here today, FDH Lounge dignitary, Sportsology proprietor and author Russ Cohen for FDH Lounge mini episode number 350. And continuing a little bit of a tradition that we've established here on the program, 250, we were putting over previously the Winter Classic book. So essentially, whenever we get to a point here, hopefully we always will have a point of a big milestone coming up, and Russ will have a book coming out. So glad to be able to use that to promote it here today. How are you doing, my friend?
Good. So now I have to write a book every 100 episodes? That's a lot to, you know, that's a tall order.
What's in the can for 450? Got any ideas?
Yeah, actually, we're working on a Ranger book, and we have a deadline of January, and it comes out next fall. So you better do some more shows.
Getting the order to get on it from Sportsology. I will do that, sir. And, yeah, it is a pleasure to be able to talk about this book with you here today. I have the electronic form of it, and I have mine coming in the mail just in time for Christmas. And spoiler alert for a special young man in the family here, if he's listening, he's getting a copy as well. A really, really great book here, Baseball's Best Rookies. Why don't you talk first, Russ, about how the thing came about, the idea for the project, how it was conceptualized, and how you went about it.
Well, I had this idea for it, and I don't know when it came to me. I don't know if it was one of those things that was in your sleep or I was watching something, and it's like Eureka, you know, and I've never said Eureka, so it probably wasn't that. But it was just one of those things where it sort of came to me that, you know, I don't recall there being a book that sort of celebrates the rookies of the year. And I didn't know if we'd get, you know, MLB's approval or not. It's hard to do that, and we didn't. So that's why it's not called like the Jackie Robinson Award, something or something. So, but we still wanted to talk about some great ones, some ones that really get forgotten. And as we started to go through this project, projects always have like an ebb and flow to them. And even though you have an outline for it, sometimes it could change directions a little. Now, if you're with the kind of publisher that they say, hey, this is what we want exactly, then, you know, you got to give them exactly. Or somebody like Motivational, who is just sort of like, yes, we like this idea, but, you know, you pretty much can do whatever you want as long as you hand it in on time and we have something to print. So, you know, I'm thankful for that because they really do give you the latitude and gave me the latitude. And they did publish the Winter Classic book, so I guess they had a little bit of faith in me. And so I remember interviewing Fred Clare, and he really had a great impact on things because then it became this book about how organizations with great scouting really can get these rookies of the year and then get them to really be good players. And he put the idea in my head, like, you know, you should really kind of see how many of them were really – good players and, you know, how many of them were busts and things. And so he said it would be fun to sort of check out. And you know, and that's where the list sort of came up with, like, well, let's go, well, you know, we'll keep it to the good ones, like he said. And so we started hashing that out, and you were a part of that. You were the end process of that, just to see if the list was totally ridiculous or not. And so it took a nice turn with that, and he gave us a lot. And so with all that he gave, rather than getting someone to write a forward, I was like, I think we should just use what Fred wrote, because what gave us, because it was gold.
Yeah, and that is something that people are going to find in the very early part of the book here, as far as how he played their role in forming this, the things that he had said to you about the players, the insight that he had with the five consecutive rookies of the year. I'm curious the extent to which it might have been a little bit bittersweet for him, because when you look at it, Piazza, a Hall of Fame caliber player, whether or not he makes it in the steroid suspicion climate, probably not right off the bat, but you would think at some point. The other guys, I mean, Eric Karros had a nice career. Raul Mondesi was pretty darn good for a good period of time there and kind of tailed off.
Yep.
Was it at all bittersweet for him in the sense that they had these guys, they all came up, they flashed bright, but the Dodgers did not have any kind of sustained success because of them?
I didn't feel that way. I think he felt proud as an organization to have produced the guys. I think that part really came across. And also, and he didn't say this, but my guess is that because baseball is a business and he didn't have any control over the way things Piazza went, then that's something that was sort of out of his control at that point. Because, you know, as a general manager, you have to do what the owner says, right? So,
yeah.
I think he was fine with all of it, and I didn't get the bittersweet part more than I got the pride part. And, you know, I'm sure people will post online, hey, the Dodgers didn't win it every year, even though they had 16 rookies of the year. And it's like, but that's not the point. The point is that they have great scouts, and they have been a pretty competitive team for the most part throughout their history, and this is the reason why.
It's interesting organizationally that some teams can be known for this fairly consistently, because you look at the midpoint of the last decade, and especially for those of us that are big into the fantasy realm, you could really see it coming with their Jacksonville AA affiliate right about 2005, 2006. You got Kemp coming through the system and Ethier and Kershaw, mm-hmm. who by the time it's all yep. said and done, probably going to go down as the best pitcher of this generation. So it's very, very mm-hmm. interesting. The Dodgers probably had a lot of turnover from when Fred Clare had his team in there, and yet this organization was able to replicate the process, whether or not they racked up a lot of Rookie of the Year trophies again.
Well, because they kept a lot of the scouts. While mm-hmm. upper management may have changed and rotated, I'm going to hazard a guess scouting didn't change that much. And
probably
so that
not.
Has still been, right, and that still has been very successful for them, so you wouldn't do that. And again, they almost had a 17th, right? How close was Puig to winning the award? So you have to tip your cap to them. You really do.
Yeah, organizationally, they have been very strong in that. And, of course, right now, they are essentially the new Yankees in baseball as far as their ability to spend endlessly. And that is how they actually acquired Puig, as you mentioned, because that was not mm-hmm. through the standard scouting channels, but going out and getting him in international free agency here in terms of Cuba. But, yeah, it's very interesting what certain organizations can do.
You still had to scout him. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they paid for him, but they still had to scout him enough to know if it was worth it to pay for him.
True, true. I guess that is the only difference, is that you had to pay more of a cost up front to get him, and you didn't have to compete with the other teams in the draft. And essentially, if you had the biggest pocketbook, you were going to get him. But you had to know whether – you're right. You had to know whether you wanted to allocate those resources for him. So, again, there's a lot that you yep. can learn about the Dodgers in the book, particularly in the early part of the book. A little bit later on, as it gets into with Jackie Robinson, when you get into your list of the top rookies in the book, a lot of organizations and a lot of great rookies are highlighted. But since we're on the Dodgers and with Jackie Robinson's – I'll just say very high place on your top 20 overall. Something came to me. A lot of times I get these kind of counterintuitive thoughts, and this is really kind of one of them. You look at it, and with his Rookie of the Year that he got, and it was one of the great rookie seasons of all time, but you pointed out, I didn't know the exact age, but that he was 28 years old. And when you take into account a player's physical prime, 27, 28, 29, pretty much thought to be mm-hmm. squarely in the middle of it there. So we look at all the disadvantages that he had, all of the racism mm-hmm. that he dealt with through the course of the season. Mm-hmm. Having said that, he was a more physically mature rookie because the color line hadn't broken before then. So it seems really counterintuitive right. to ask this, but, I mean, did he have any kind of advantages as a 28-year-old rookie, even while he was dealing with all the disadvantages?
I mean, if you want to give him one, you could say mentally, because he was a mentally strong guy. After
okay.
that, I think the cards were stacked against him. So
yeah,
I would say maybe the mental part, that certainly helped him. And look, I think there are stat geeks out there that could look at this and say, oh, there's better guys statistically ahead of Robinson, that could be ahead of Robinson. But, you know, when we did this and we matched them up and we had a couple different people give me their lists and then we came up with the most common, we looked at it and then we did take into account things that don't show up on the stat sheet. And obviously he dealt with a lot of that.
He really did. No question about it. And again, somebody who was a tremendous all-around athlete. I remember one of our editions of the FDH Lounge Pantheon when we were going for the best athlete across sports. He actually got a fair number of votes because of all of the things that he did when he was at UCLA. He was sort of
basketball, yeah.
Exactly. Kind of had like a Jim Thorpe kind of thing going, and most people don't really view him that way because he didn't play at a high level anywhere aside from Major League Baseball. But, yeah, he really was somebody who was very strong. This list, by the way, and just to clarify, this is among players who were eligible to win Rookie of the Year, because I had put a question to you previously. Mm-hmm. Another one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, Steve Callis, had been talking to me about Joe DiMaggio's rookie season. We were doing a segment. We were comparing Mike Trout to the greatest rookie mm-hmm. seasons of all time. I asked you about mm-hmm. Joe D's omission from the list, and you clarified that. So when people read this, it's among people who were eligible to win Rookie of the Year, and there was not that award when Joe D was there.
No, actually not even eligible, the ones who won, period. If you didn't win, you're not even eligible.
Okay. So you
and
had
just
to
because
want
there's
it.
So many, that you go looking mm-hmm. and there's so many. So of those rookies, then we wanted to decide who had the best rookie seasons.
Well, and it really is one of these kind of strange things, isn't it, that some years there's guys where somebody gets it more or less by default, and I'm looking at the list here, somewhere in the teens, I'll just say, Ryan Braun on there. So somebody like, I remember that was an epic race. You talked about Yasiel Puig losing out to Jose Fernandez this year. Puig would have won it most years. Troy Tulowitzki mm-hmm. would have won it most years. Troy Tulowitzki conceivably could have been on your list, but then wouldn't have been eligible because Ryan Braun beat him out in that really epic race that they had.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
And I guess I placed tremendous weight, and so did the other guys on the Baseball Writers Association, getting it right. And look, you've seen I've done articles where I felt like the Baseball Writers Association have been getting it wrong for the Hall of Fame. But I will say for the Rookie of the Year award, when you go and look at it and you look at who came in second and third, you know, almost every time they got it right. I mean, if you want to argue a couple of them, you certainly can. But most of them they win the argument.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a couple that are on here that are very interesting, because when you look and specifically at center fielders on the list, the one guy that really kind of stems to mind a lot of times when people are thinking about an absolute shooting star of a rookie, somebody who was very sensational, would have been old Freddie Lynn back in 75, because he took home the MVP as well as Rookie of the Year, which is a very, very rare thing to accomplish. Mike Trout, of course, came very, very close to duplicating that in 2012. Had Miguel Cabrera not won the Triple Crown, he very well might have done that. That was a classic in the whole stats versus intangibles kind of argument there. It denied Trout the MVP. But Freddie Lynn, what he did, and it's very interesting because you have a section on him in there. Again,
well,
the notion of him.
To, and I'm going to stop you. Mm-hmm. I had to do it because I wanted to talk to Fred Lynn in the worst way. I definitely grew up as a fan, and mm-hmm. he made me like the Red Sox for a while the Mets were stinking. And so I sort of took them on as a second team for a little bit until about 86, and then I said, okay, well, this is crazy. I'm still a Met fan, and so goodbye, Red Sox.
Priorities.
I'm not going to, you know. Yeah, and so I went full Met at that point, but I never really gave up on him. But anyhow, Lynn was just a great guy to watch, and he was an exciting player, and he had this almost perfect swing. And so there were definite things I wanted to find out about him, and the more I spoke to him, the more that I realized I can't just use a few quotes on this guy. He has to get his own section, because basically not only did he have one of the greatest rookie seasons ever, but he's also one of the most interesting rookie seasons ever. I mean, look, he got close to taking home a World Series trophy, too, which back then would have even put him on a more legendary status with Red Sox fans. So think about it, and I'll cross over to the Dwight Gooden quote that's in there. Dwight Gooden blew me away. When I met him, I was like, and I told him I was writing a book on the Rookie of the Year, and he gave me the quote that's in there and basically said it was more important to him than the Cy Young because you only have one shot at it. That's when I knew writing this book was a good idea. Because if someone like Dwight Gooden told me that, and I didn't expect that, that sort of blew me away. So now going back to Fred Lynn had a sort of a different take on it, and I'm not going to give all of it away, but it wasn't anticlimactic. He was happy that he won, but he just lost the World Series too. So, you know, readers could read the rest, but it was an interesting year. But it's just interesting how players could have a different feel for it, but both are proud after the fact that they won it.
Sure. And that's a guy that, again, people look at him, and it's really kind of unfair, I suppose, that people see a failure in looking at what came next with him, because, again, he was somebody, particularly the way that he played the game, he did have a tendency to get hurt because he played the game hard. Some guys are just more injury-prone on top of that than others. You mentioned, however, his very sweet swing. So is it a case of where, again, you know, if he stayed healthy, do you really think he would have been one of the best players of his generation, or do you think the expectations just got too high in 75?
No. I do believe he would have been one of the best of his generation, and I would never call him a failure because I think if we look at his lifetime numbers, they're still pretty good. And,
sure.
And I want to say he was probably a three-time All-Star at least. So he definitely had other seasons that were still All-Star worthy. The thing about Lynn was he got hurt a lot because of the way he played in the field too. And he would do anything to make a play. And I remember one time his ankle just sort of giving out in the outfield and he still made a play. I mean, it's just, you know, and that was sort of like Fred Lynn. And if he was in there, he'd kill you. I mean, you know, there's a game in there and I don't have the book exactly where I'd like it, but I want to say, what was it, an 8 RBI game? Is that, is that right? And
I believe so.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, how many guys do that in the history of the game? You have to be pretty good. And it wasn't just for that year. I think he had pretty fair stats, I do. And I think he was an above-average major leaguer. But the injuries definitely curtailed him.
Absolutely, yeah. And I don't subscribe to the notion that he was a failure, but there are a lot of people that are very kind of harsh, unduly so, I would say, in their assessment of what his career was, especially relative to the expectations. It's really interesting when you think about it. This thought just kind of came to me as you were talking about him, that you had within the course of a half dozen years, all in the American League, really colorful type meteor players that ultimately didn't have the kind of careers that people were looking for out of them, starting with Fred Lynn in 75, Mark the Bird Fiedrich, 76. We talked a little bit off air. Super Joe Charbonneau, I was a kid in the summer of 1980 who thrilled to his exploits. And it's really kind of interesting, the mirror image between Mark Fiedrich and Super Joe with everything that they did. Both of them were kind of wacky. That kind of played into the public fascination of them. Super Joe, every bit the slugger that Mark Fiedrich was, an ace. Both of them breaking down the next year because of injuries. So you had three guys right there that if you just looked at the rookie seasons, you would have thought, okay, these will be among the best players of the generation. And Mark, as it turned out, Fred Lynn came the closest by far out of the three.
Yeah, there's no question. And Charbonneau, I don't know, even at my young age, if I looked at him and thought that he was anything more than a shooting star, a guy who, you know, got his break, had a really great year, and, you know, was a good power hitter for that year. The thing about Fiedrich is, when you think about it in retrospect, because that was a big deal, right? We watched him start in the All-Star game. Like, there was a lot of things he did in his rookie season that a lot of players don't generally do. And and not only did he start in the All-Star game, he already had commercials, right? He had, like, the Foamy commercial or one of those. I mean, he was literally a media star by the time the All-Star break hit, which is a tremendous thing considering he was in Detroit, right? He wasn't in New York. So you look at that and you say, wow, he had an amazing impact. And then you go look at the amount of innings that he threw. And he threw an inordinate amount of innings. I want to say it's something like 287 or something crazy. For a rookie season, nobody would ever, ever, ever get close to that. You saw how early the Mets shut down Matt Harvey in his second year when he was having a potential Cy Young year. Now, I don't know if that's right either, but they certainly blew out Fidrich's arm.
Yeah, and the book explores what happened with his rookie year. It was very interesting, some of the stories about that. And, again, this is a guy where there's really been a legend that's kind of crept up around him. So I have to take my hat off to you that there were still things I was able to learn about it from the book. And as I said, I was very – very glad to see, as an Indians fan, Super Joe getting his run in there because, again, that just the epitome of a cult hero kind of a guy. And for one summer, I mean, the team was still miserable, but for one summer, a guy who really kind of gave a lot of hope there. It's very interesting. We talked before about franchises. Maybe the Dodgers have had the sun shining on them to a certain extent with what they've been able to do over a period of time. Quite the opposite for my Cleveland Indians, because I look at the list here, number 14, Herb Score. Somebody who, again, I was fortunate enough to get to hear many, many years on the radio doing the Indians broadcasts. And as much as people love to put over Tom Hamilton, I'll tell you, it hasn't been the same since old Herbie left. But a guy who, again, just you talk about cut short. That seems to be the theme with a lot of these guys here. With him, it was more sudden than others. He took that line drive shot to the head, and boom, never able to get it done after that. Just a real, real shame because he had a career going. He would have been among the all-time greats on the pace he was at.
Yeah, there's no question. And we toiled over the list and a lot of guys, but I didn't want the list to – and if you notice, I didn't put any stats. I didn't put any methodology, nothing like that, because this wasn't a book where we ranked players. This was just like a book where we wrote about players, tried to give some more stories and some more focus to just that rookie season. If you notice, we don't talk about much of anything else that they did other than the rookie season. I mean, you know, sometimes you stray a little bit, but we really tried to keep it pretty tight with that. But we wanted to have the list just to sort of add another element, but not make that the book.
Exactly. And that, matter of fact, it's kind of later in the book there. So you kind of go out of your way to spotlight the stories as opposed to the list. And again, I think most people would agree, it's hard to come up with a hard and fast list here, scientific. This is how it 1 through 10. Because again, it's all subjective. The numbers in many different cases you're comparing across eras. But having said that, I'll just say very high on the list, top five. Mike Trout, with what he did in 2012, this is one of these things where I sometimes wonder, in this day and age, we're so used to hyperbole, I think people get jaded. I get the sense that because there's been so much hype around other players in recent years, that it's really kind of gotten lost in the weeds how just historically great this guy has been his first 2 years. I mean, he was not a guy that was getting compared to Ken Griffey Jr. or other guys of that generation. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that was getting Mickey Mantle comparisons his rookie year and living up to them, quite frankly. Do you get that sense that, this, especially because he's not really a household word beyond baseball yet, and in a way like a Ken Griffey Jr. would? The test I always use is, would my dad know who this guy is? Because my dad didn't really follow baseball that much, but the guys that are in the mainstream, he knows who they are. Do you get the sense, to some extent, people just don't grasp how historically great this guy is?
Yeah, I do, and I could see that across the country. Now, I'm in his area, right? I literally live a half an hour north of where he went to high school. So, of course, I was clued in to Mike Trout to some degree. Now, again, I don't get a lot of Angels games, and I'm a National League fan, but he made me have to figure out who he was pretty quickly in his career and what he was doing. I knew about him when, you know, they were writing about him occasionally once or twice a year and when he was going through the minors. And there was a certain little bit of a legend of Mike Trout for sure. But as that season went on, it was obvious this guy was something really special, like totally different than you've seen in the last 5 years from a player, because we've seen rookies come up that sort of take over the league. Like, let's say, even if you want to use Yasiel Puig as an example, but there were still hitches in his game. You know, there were times where he didn't run the bases great. There were times where he'd make unbelievable plays in the outfield and not make unbelievable plays. I never watched a game where I felt like Mike Trout ever really made any mistakes or many. I mean, this guy does almost everything right, from running the bases to the hustle factor to fielding to just making contact. Very little he does wrong if you think about it.
Absolutely, yeah. His tools, his talents are so great, and the fact that he works hard, it almost doesn't seem fair. You almost expect the guy to slack off
a
little bit just to make it fair
guy.
For everybody else. Humble, yeah.
He's a humble guy. He was, you know, by the time his rookie season was over, and by the time we caught up with him, he was already almost done with the rubber chicken circuit. He was just looking forward to fishing.
Yeah. You know what? And I was reading stories about what his off season was like, and the whole crush of publicity that he was getting when he was back home, and everybody catching up with him. You were probably somewhat privy to that as it was happening. And that's the kind of thing where many of these other guys on the list, it would have been their downfall the next year. I mean, the sophomore jinx. We just have it kind of beaten into our heads. I can't remember too many instances of it in recent years that are that bad. I remember in the 80s and the 90s that used to kind of be a thing. And in the case of guys like Super Joe and Mark Fidrich, it's something they never pulled out of. But in the case of Trout, you know, his next year was almost a carbon copy as far as the greatness goes.
Yeah, there's no question about it. So none of us had a problem. And again, we didn't go crazy with sabermetrics. We didn't. I believe in them to a certain degree. I also believe in the eye test. I also believe in run producing being king over almost anything else. And this guy walks, he steals. I mean, numbers are pretty gaudy, but then if you really break them down too, I mean, they're really pretty spectacular.
Absolutely. And as far as the players on this list here, and any kind of, whether it be controversy, issues surrounding their rookie season, or things like of that nature. We talked about that before, Jackie Robinson being a 28-year-old rookie, a guy who really should have been admitted to the National League sooner, but for the reasons everybody knows about. Mark McGwire, number 12 on the list here. Know that, again, at the time, people didn't necessarily know the guy was into steroids, and I guess if you look at him at that point in time, he probably wasn't because his body was a little bit different.
Probably wasn't. Right.
Probably wasn't. But I look at another guy that's in the top 10, I'll just say, Ichiro, and that's a guy where I remember in 2001 there was a fair amount of debate. There wasn't any debate on the legality of whether he was up for Rookie of the Year because it was universally understood that he was. But for a guy coming over and having a long career prior to that, relatively speaking, he was still a somewhat young guy, but a successful career in Japan, and you look at that and you're trying to work a transition in your mind or some kind of comparison, okay, where does this stack up against, say, the International League? Ichiro is a guy where it wasn't universally accepted among people that he should qualify against all the other rookies that are out there. And yet that clearly played no role in where you slotted him.
No, and because I never felt that way because the rule was the rule. So I, you know, immediately in my mind, even back then, sort of threw it out. And then if you think about it, up to that point, how many successful Japanese outfielders or even just offensive players where they're not counting pitchers, right? It was a short list. And then you figure out what this guy did, which was way beyond what I thought he was going to do, and I thought he'd be good. And then now you look at what he did for a 10-year period. It's pretty unbelievable. I remember saying, boy, after his rookie season, if this guy does this for like 8-10 years, he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer, even though he's not going to have a full MLB career. And I think he's going to get voted into the Hall of Fame. I think he'll be hard-pressed not to because of all the hits he got and the dominant player he was for a long time. Now, clearly, he's on the other side now, and he'll compile some numbers before he's done. But he had a pretty good run there, and that rookie season was he not a star? I mean, he definitely was a star, and there was something about him. And that's what's fun to write about these guys. He had that something, as we like to say.
He really did. And, again, that's a guy where early on I kind of got that sense watching him. Like, that's a guy that I want to go see when he's at the ballpark in town here. When he's passing through Cleveland, I
want to
go
see
that guy.
Why did you want to see him?
Well, one of the things that just kind of got me was the ability to swing a baseball bat like it's a tennis racket, the ability, like you're doing a drop shot in tennis. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that before. It's really just amazing. I guess if you go back in time, and I think I remember some old-timer say, like, that's how Wee Willie Keeler used to drop them in there. Okay, if you go way back to before my lifetime, you know, maybe there's some guys that could do that and hit the drop shot. But just the fact that I'm using tennis terminology here, that's why I wanted to see him.
Yeah, Pete Rose certainly did it like that. But what really got me about him after seeing him a few times was he certainly did that. He ran the bases amazingly. Like, this guy had such an instinct on the bases. He stole amazingly. And in his fielding, it was just fluid. He'd make a play, and you would never be able to take the extra base. And he didn't have the strongest arm in the world, but he had an accurate arm. And this was a guy that you looked at him and you said, he's not that big a guy, but look how good his arm is. Look how much ground he covered. It was his entire game. Like, we all like Sin Chu Chu now. He's a really nice player. He's still not the player Ichiro was, and he's a nice player.
Absolutely. And for a guy that Ichiro is teammates with at this point in time in the twilight of his career, another guy who's in the twilight of his career as well, Derek Jeter, a guy who makes your list, and I found that to be very interesting because, again, you were using different criteria for selecting players, and as you said, you know, just in some cases it was kind of feel. But I have to believe that for him to have made the list, and again, top 20 rookie season of all time, this is very rarefied air, and particularly when you read the blurbs on some of the other guys in the book who didn't make that list. For Jeter to have made it, I'm guessing the fact that rookie season in 1996 was the start of that big run for the Yankees. Yeah, they'd made the playoffs the year before, but they didn't win a series there. The impact of his season and ultimately his career on what that Yankees run would be in the eyes of history, I'm guessing that must have factored in somewhere there, the historical significance of him and the start of his career.
Yeah, and it was huge. And again, remember I'm a Met fan. Remember that Jeter was a Met killer and in interleague play, in the World Series, in the Subway Series, World Series. So all those things taken out of it and just looking at his rookie year, I was – around for that, and I watched it intently, and it's not an easy thing to do to all of a sudden become the Yankees' everyday shortstop and everyday leadoff hitter and produce when they weren't the greatest team yet and sort of lead even at that young age. And so while the numbers aren't gaudy, they're certainly respectable for a shortstop. But then you have a lot of other factors, and he overcame them all.
Absolutely, and intangibles have always been a very, very big part of his story, so I'm not surprised that that would be a factor there as well. The list is very interesting, and again, there are blurbs on the guys in here as well.
There's debate on guys in there. I mean, trust me.
Sure.
I'm sure if I had my cousin Peter on, he would still tell you, you know, Bob Grimm. I don't know about Bob Grimm. And, you know, so there's still plenty of debate, but, you know, that's why we had more than one person doing this.
That's pretty funny you mentioned that, because that's the next name I was going to bring up. I was going to say, a guy who places pretty high on your list who, honestly, for a guy like me, he kind of fallen through the cracks of history. I kind of scrolled back in the book there. Okay, let me read up a little bit more on this guy. What's Russ got to say about him? And, again, that's what makes it very interesting, because there's a lot of names on here. There's a lot of guys on the list. It's like, okay, well, of course, he was going to be on the list, and him, and I remember that. But there's a handful of them, and, you know, you just said Bob Grimm, and he's the first guy that flashed into my mind because he's pretty high on your list there. Honestly, I really needed that refresher course on what the guy did, because he's another one of these guys that kind of flamed out after the rookie season, at least as far as reaching that potential. But in that rookie season, he was so very good.
Yeah, he was pretty much their everything guy. He had games started. He had games finished where he was 20-6. You know, how many rookies – I think he was 20-6. I'm going by memory. But how many rookies have that kind of record, right? I mean, I understand his ERA wasn't the best. I get that. But when you have a rookie that you could put in there and you could pretty much slot him into almost anything, and, of course, he helped the Yankees be successful that year, that's a pretty big deal, I think. And obviously one of the other voters felt the same way. So, and it was Howie. So when you look at that, it's like, you know what? I know a lot of people don't know him. I knew the name. I didn't know him that well as a player because it's pre-my time. But I like to look at a lot of things in baseball. So I really started looking into him too. And I was having a little bit of internal debate, but at the end of the day, I looked at it and said, boy, look at the contribution. And I did look at wins over replacement for this guy because I felt like he was pretty invaluable for them that year.
Well, yeah, a list like this, if it's done right, is always going to gin up a couple of guys in there. At least they're going to make you kind of scratch your head, and then you go back and you look at it and you say, hey, Russ got this one right. I see what he was doing there. But, yeah, I mean, if you'd stuck to just the obvious names, I don't think the list would have as much integrity as it does. But, again, people can read earlier in the book the blurb on Bob Grimm. There's a lot of great blurbs in the book here as well. We've gone through a decent chunk of it.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, not to interrupt, but you're a guy from Ohio.
Sure. Yeah.
When's the last time you heard anybody talk about Scott Williamson?
Boy, that's been a long time. It's been a long time, yeah. Not any time recently.
Right. And so I happened to know Dimitri Young, and I said, hey, can you talk about him? And I think what he gave me was so good that we had to put it on the back cover. And it reminded me just how invaluable this guy was to the Reds that year. And I believe they made the playoffs that year. Right. And so that was pretty something too, because you go and you look at the contribution this guy had, and love a shooting star, no question about it. But now this is from one of his teammates telling you, and same with Felix Mion on Earl Williams. When I was growing up, I was 8 years old. I was collecting baseball cards. Earl Williams was killing it that year. And a friend of mine, Mark Roseman, was able to get this quote from Felix about Earl. And I was happy he did, because he did that on his own, Mark. I think I asked him to get a few guys, and I didn't know he was going to run into Felix Mion. And he said, hey, and I got you Felix Mion talking about Earl Williams. And I was just like, you know what? Thank you. That's great, because Earl is a forgotten guy. I don't know if you've ever heard anybody talk about Earl Williams.
Not a whole lot, to be honest with you.
No. And so, when you start doing a book like this, you almost feel like you want to give these guys their due because, again, when you're a rookie of the year, that means you were the best in your town, and then you were the best in either college or the minor leagues, and then for that year, you were the best young player in Major League Baseball in the league that you played in. That's a long progression. Obviously, most players never even get to get close to that.
And it's very interesting that you didn't pick up on any real bitterness here. I'm guessing you didn't, because you would have mentioned it if you did. Somebody like a Dwight Gooden, somebody like a Fred Lynn, the fact that they're getting interviewed for a Rookie of the Year book as opposed to a Hall of Fame book, it's very interesting that these guys, you wouldn't necessarily always assume that this would be the case, particularly when there is that kind of potential that, again, in the eyes of so many, goes vastly unrealized. In the case of Dwight Gooden, certainly much more self-inflicted than with Fred Lynn, who was just really injured an awful lot. But very interesting that they could have the attitudes of feeling grateful for what they had as far as that shooting star Rookie of the Year campaign, and as far as that moment in time, as opposed to, I don't get the sense of them bemoaning what might have been.
No, I mean, look, Gooden, eventually became a champion. He went through his ups and downs. He pitched a no-hitter. He had 200 wins. Now he's pretty thankful for even the career he had. I don't think he dwells on it anymore. I think he did for a long time, and that was eating him up. But I don't think he dwells on it anymore. I think he looks back at the positive. And if we look at Dwight Gooden and we say, okay, forget about Russ's book for a minute, and we sort of put his place in baseball history, well, I got to tell you, for 4 or 5 years, the guy was pretty unhittable. And he had a really nice career. He just didn't have a Hall of Fame career. But he had a really good career.
He did. He did. And the tail end of it, when he was with my Cleveland Indians during their glory days there in the late 90s, he still had a little bit of something left in the tank. And, that was
he pitched a playoff game for them. I watched it.
He really, at that point, yeah, he had enough left in the tank at that point to do it. He wasn't what he used to be, and I think everybody understood that that was going to be the case, but he was able to give you pretty good effectiveness, and as that old country song goes, that every once in a while he could be like he once was, I guess you could say, just briefly here and there, and that would sometimes be enough in certain circumstances. But again, the book has the list of the 20 rookies and is filled. That's, again, just a small part of it. It's the blurbs all throughout the book, the stories, the anecdotes from interviews with the players. We've touched on a pretty good chunk of it all the way around, I would say. But are there any other things in there that you feel are particularly noteworthy that haven't come up yet?
No, I think what was most fun about it was some of the theme chapters. I mean, again, it's not a huge book. It's 88 pages, and it's sort of like a book that I remember what I would get as a kid. We'd have a book club in school, and you'd order 2-3 books, and you know, you get them. It seemed like it would take forever, right? But it probably only took a couple weeks, and you get them, and that's what you would read in study hall or when you were at home or on your break or at lunch. And obviously mine were always sports, which I guess is a good thing now, but maybe in retrospect I should have been more well-rounded. I read a little science fiction. But my point is I sort of wanted to recreate something like that. And that was in my mind because I don't see a lot of that now. And so this way it's not me preaching at you like, look, I'm going to teach you something about baseball because I have this great knowledge. It's more like, hey, you pick it up, maybe, you know, you learn something. If not, there's some fun things in there. And we cover, you know, the Japanese players, and we cover the 1964 year, which has some players that are pretty interesting. And that's the thing. I think the one thing we could agree upon is baseball's a pretty interesting sport when you do break down the rookies. And it is fun to see who played for what, when, because some of these guys you know later in your career, you forget they even played for their team that brought them up because they maybe got traded 2 or 3 times, like a guy like Dick Allen. And it's fun to sort of go back and even go back and looking at stats. I mean, my favorite player of all time is Tom Seaver. And so going back and looking at his stats, I saw that he had a couple of steals in his rookie year. Clearly, after his rookie year, you're never, ever going to want Tom Seaver to steal a base for you. And they probably were both on the back end of a double steal. But, you know, after a while, it was like, you can't do that with this guy. He's too valuable, even back then.
Exactly. My favorite player as a kid, he wouldn't have been eligible for this list here. This is just because you're as big into baseball as you are. This is somebody that I'm sure you have at least some familiarity with. Andre Thornton was my guy back in the day. For that one magical year with him and Super Joe in 1980, a little bit of protection in the lineup for Big Andre as his career was already starting to hit the back nine there. But again, just a tremendous book full of all kinds of wonderful blurbs on these players. And again, I think a nice little niche in the marketplace here, because as you said, if you want to go out there and strain your mind about, you know, how does the war and the VORP of one player compare to another, there's a lot of places you can do that, and there's a lot of places you can do that on the internet. But just, you know, go swim around in some nice stories about these players and, you know, learn a little bit in a way that's not going to make your brain hurt too much. It's a great book. It's something people of all ages can really appreciate. And, again, been great to break it down with you here. This has been a nice little tradition here, celebrating milestones of the FDH Lounge here with your book releases, Russ. But a great one here, Baseball's Best Rookies. Much success with the book here. I know it's going to go great for you, and great luck getting it blasted out here during this holiday season, my friend.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate it, Rick, and thanks for giving it a read and making it one of your shows.
Yeah, really love doing it. And again, it's really something that was a tremendous amount of pride that I had for you as I was reading it and enjoying it, and a great book. I can't recommend it highly enough. Baseball's Best Rookies from the great Russ Cohen. Russ, thank you so much, my friend, for being a part of Mini Episode 350.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, buddy. Take care. Thank you all for tuning in, everybody. FDH Lounge, Mini Episode 350.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.